Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gygax, and today, first I want to get a little business out of the way before we get into the meat of the episode. You already know, based on the title, we're going to talk about the concerned letter carriers. But first, I need to let you guys know that I just turned 50 a couple weeks ago. Let's see, I'm recording this on Tuesday, July 8th, 2025. So I've been almost a month now at 50 years old, and that's kind of cool. I am enjoying this so far. And to celebrate my 50th birthday, I'm taking a bucket list trip going to Peru to climb the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu. It is a four-day hike, and I'm going to spend like 12 days total out of country. So I don't have episodes scheduled. I may try to record a few episodes and get those to release, but I'll probably wind up doing a travel log while I'm down there. So if you're interested in how things are going in Peru and what that's like, I will release an episode, but I'll make sure that it's clear in the title that it's a travel log because it won't be postal educational. Although, if I gain insights into what the mail delivery is like in Peru, you can be sure I will talk about that because that is interesting to me. Okay, so with that said, temper expectations for the rest of July. Don't expect a ton of episodes because I'm going to be out of town. Okay, now, on to the concerned letter carriers. So this episode, I've done an episode in the past on the concerned letter carriers platform. But at the time, the platform wasn't super well fleshed out, certainly not to the degree that it is today. And at some point in the not too distant future, I'd like to have James Henry back on to talk about the way the platform has evolved, some of the more detailed positions that they have in here. But for now, I'm just going to talk about what is published on the Concerned Letter Carrier's website. So the first thing I noticed in preparation for this episode is that there is the main page of the CLC's website, or the main platform page, and it has their platform laid out on bullet points, but then it also has click here for a printer-friendly version, and that version is different. It's a little more detailed. It has a big biographical section about James Henry, and so I'm going to skip that. You guys mainly know what James Henry is about. He was a Marine. He was a shop steward, and has held a bunch of positions within the NALC where he was a high-level grievance handler, very skilled grievance handler. So, with that out of the way, now let's get on to what the CLC is actually proposing for change, and this time I'm going to annotate, with my own thoughts about what they're proposing, because I do not agree with every last thing on here. I pretty much agree with them, but, I think there's room for some discussion here. All right, so the first bullet point, NALC headquarters reforms. Main table bargaining committee, made up of the president and at a minimum two other executive council members. This creates a redundancy system. If one component of the bargaining committee goes down, there's two others who don't have to start from scratch. So right away, this is obviously a response to what we went through with Brian Renfro, where he didn't show up for negotiating and we were just left hanging, and we saw how poorly that worked out. So this is a reform that's obviously necessary. Next, it says that the committee be required to give frequent detailed reports to the executive council of meetings, when they took place, who was met with, and what was discussed. Seems good. We'll direct the executive council to establish an attendance control policy requiring all officers to request leave for absences and authorization for travel. And it goes on that the policy addresses how all officers request FMLA if necessary, or reasonable accommodation for work. So again, this is in response to what we dealt with Renfro, where he just stopped showing up to work and essentially said, I don't have to answer to anybody. Now, one of the problems with a policy like this is just instituted by the president. And I give credit to James Henry for wanting to institute these kind of policies because they're going to affect him. He's essentially limiting his own discretion and freedom by implementing policies like this. And I'm all for that. I think that our union officers, the people at the highest level, should be held the most accountable for their behavior and their work, and they're serving all of us. And if you want to be at that highest position, you need to be held to a higher standard. The downside is, and this is something that I want to ask Mr. Henry about, is what happens after he leaves office? How do these, you know, can the next person just come in and rescind all of these policies and go back to the Wild West the way it was before? Probably. And that's part of the reason that, like, proposing amendments to the Constitution at our next convention is so important. Even if we think, okay, James Henry is going to come in and he's going to be this ethical person of high integrity, we could get another Brian Renfro after that. You know, who knows? And so we need these sorts of policies in place with a little more teeth to them. All right, moving on. We'll direct the Executive Council to establish a sexual harassment policy that applies to all national officers of the NALC. This is obviously a good idea. And again, this is more of that self-policing that I think is so important that a person of integrity isn't bothered by. We'll direct the Executive Council to establish an NALC driving privilege policy requiring all officers to have a valid driver's license and insurance to drive. That the policy applies to NALC-owned vehicles, rented vehicles, or if reimbursement is requested for business travel. As you may know, we had a previous president, or our current president, got in trouble for DUI, and I know that was eventually adjudicated in a way that I don't think he has a DUI on his record, but, you know, this is obviously a problem, and it's worth addressing. Next, transparency being the key ingredient for reform, I will lift the veil of secrecy that surrounds national headquarters. I will ensure the Executive Council minutes and financial reports will be published in the postal record. Dude, I'm very much in favor of that. I think people need to know what's going on at headquarters and what type of work they're actually doing. You know, what's going on up there? What, like, these committees, right? I've talked about this on previous Classes of Mail, where we have like a parking committee. What do they do? What work are they actually achieving? You know, we should have access to all this stuff. All right, next bullet point. Establish a dispute resolution task force. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. This is under the heading Build a Fighting Union. First, reestablish a director of education. This is obviously very relevant to my interests. We will launch a Stewards Academy, offering a comprehensive online learning platform on a diverse range of subjects. So this harkens back to like what I talked to Rob Cozier about, because we have opportunities to teach more people and to reach more people. We don't have to only do in-person teaching. It's expensive and, you know, it's not accessible to everybody. And so putting a lot of this stuff online, making it more integrated with technology, we can reach way more people. So, all right, moving on. The NALC advocate and arbitration advocate will resume publication. It's going to take well-documented or well-educated stewards and officers to face the challenges of today and in the future. By developing a well-trained and talented pool, we'll create opportunities for rank-and-file members to become shop stewards, arbitration advocates, NALC Step B representatives, GRAs, RAAs, and leaders of the future. All right, so that's all there is about education. And obviously, I like what's in here, but I think this is where I'm going to diverge a little bit. I think there's something missing, and it's the primary focus of Classes of Mail. It's the education of regular carriers. Everything in here is about educating stewards, and that's only half the equation. It's obviously very important, but carriers need better education as well. That's why Classes of Mail was started, and it's needed at the national level. All right, so hopefully we can get Mr. Henry to add that to his platform. Next, establish a dispute resolution task force. We must have a creditable dispute resolution process that is just and swift. Currently, there are over 15,000 grievances backlogged at Step B and 5,000 cases pending arbitration. This did not happen overnight. Obviously, the 59 teams currently in place are inadequate to deal with the backlog and new cases coming in. More teams are needed, and that will happen. However, the NALC responsibilities for the DRT process are not specific to the Step B and arbitration process. The 15,000 backlog grievances at Step B are just the tip of the iceberg. There are thousands of grievances backlogged at Steps A and Informal A. My experience as a branch officer and as a chief instructor for the NALC's Formal A and Beyond training tells me that we have a vast reservoir of talent and sophistication within the rank and file. With that said, we can develop a force of aggressive advocates breaking the backlog, protecting the rights of letter carriers, and improving working conditions. We will always be mindful that justice delayed is justice denied. So this is a way, you know, this backlog of grievances, management does whatever it is they're going to do, and then our recourse is the grievance process. And so when we have grievances that go unadjudicated, that just sit and wait in backlog, until that grievance is adjudicated, management wins. They're getting exactly what they want. That's why we had to file the grievance in the first place. And so all of this stuff that gets delayed, that gets backlogged, that gets ignored, that gets put off, all of that favors management. And it's a failing of our union leadership that we have let it go this far. Next, hostile work environment abatement. The use of electronic supervision has caused a significant decline in our working conditions and has given management tools to covertly conduct street observations. It's not that our current leadership doesn't recognize the daily torment caused by electronic supervision, it's that they chose to ignore it and view it as a mere inconvenience. We will establish firm contract provisions which forbid the use of any kind of electronic device to supervise, conduct observations, or use for discipline. So we already have contractual provisions in place like this, or at least memos in place like this, and arbitrator rulings in place that reinforce that, you know, the scanner alone can't be used for discipline. But management is still moving more and more in that direction. And obviously, our union needs to be more aggressive in fighting back against that. And, you know, at least for now, James Henry's main opponent is Brian Renfro. Presumably, Renfro will run. And that's who, you know, will be. Obviously, Mike Cariff is in the running as well. And in my opinion, Brian Renfro is a distant third in that runoff. But anyway, if you are a supporter of the status quo, you know, you have to see that management is moving more and more in the direction of increased surveillance on carriers with the telematics in the vehicles and additional surveillance in the vehicles, like in the newer vehicles, and, you know, the scanners checking the way we drive, checking how long we're standing still. All that stuff is being used by management to harass carriers. And where is the union pushing back on that and educating, to go back to the previous point, educating the rank and file carrier who's actually out there dealing with it, that these things are not allowed and we don't have to be in fear of our own scanners. Next, we will create task forces of well-trained and aggressive advocates to intervene in those work sites with hostile work environments in order to eliminate the harassment, bullying, intimidation, and manipulating of letter carriers. This is obviously a reference to the Dogs of War that Corey Walton is putting together to do exactly this. The initial focus of these task forces will be to address environmental issues with every resource in the book. We will spread the net of responsibility as far and as wide as needed to uproot the enablers who permit abusive managers to remain on the workroom floor. Once that process is underway, we will focus on training local shop stewards and officers to aggressively engage every level of management until city letter carriers are treated with dignity and respect. And again, this is obviously a great idea, but I think we can add to it by also educating carriers themselves. We, you know, our obligation to educate doesn't stop at stewards. And that really bothers me about this platform, that the carriers themselves, they're just along for the ride. All right, next. Establish an organizing director. We will create a structure that taps into the positive public perception of letter carriers and seeks their support for our cause. We will provide training for local organizers and support direct action where the rank and file are part of the bargaining process. Both national and regional organizers will work with branches to motivate involvement and drive turnout. They will also have responsibility to work with branches in making the community aware of the issues facing city letter carriers. So this is yet another way that our union currently is dropping the ball, because we have this massive pool of humans, of people who can go out on the streets with picket signs, raise awareness, write letters to their congresspeople, to show up at the congresspeople's office. You know, the kind of work that John Murphy is doing down in Florida, and the kind of work that activists are doing in fits and starts around the country. Another activist in Portland and Seattle, places like that. But we need more coordinated action. And we see the effect that it has. We see, you know, that there is public support for us. We just have to harness it. And this is not something where there's some barrier to us. You know, all of these things, not all of them, but most of the things in this platform so far are items that could readily be achieved by the current administration. They're just choosing not to do it. You know, it's not a priority for them. It's not important for them. Next, making letter carrier safety a priority. Letter carriers are being robbed and assaulted in record numbers. Speeches and marches have done little to stem the ever-increasing number of crimes committed on letter carriers. It's time for a full court press. Our legislative department needs to be involved with local officials to increase the police presence and quicker response times. And legislation needs to be passed to provide for substantial rewards for information leading to the arrest of those who rob and assault letter carriers. Our director of safety will work with the USPS to develop training for letter carriers and managers. Hey, there we go, actual training for carriers. An emergency device feature on the scanner needs to be added that can notify local police immediately of a robbery or assault and location. Now, there's a good idea. We need access to trauma counselors if necessary. If necessary, organize a continual direct action campaign to spur local officials to lend greater support, community awareness, and demand that the USPS curtail delivery in high crime areas. Yeah, our safety is supposed to be a priority, and management is supposed to be, you know, on board in the same way, but these concrete steps seem very slow to take place. So it remains to be seen what a new union leadership can do, but at a minimum, you know, I'd like to think they're going to be more aggressive and assertive and more interested in drawing public support. You know, you've seen in speeches from Brian Renfro that he's not interested in rallying public support and having rallies, things like that. It's just not something that he seems to value. And I think that's a missed opportunity. I mean, as a union activist in general, we should be rallying. We should be siding with other unions that rally, things like that. Next, principled contract negotiations. To understand the possibilities, you need to understand where we are. The U.S. Postal Service reported a record high in revenue last year of $72 billion. It also reported a loss of $6 billion. I think these numbers are outdated by now, but regardless, the message is the same. A very dramatic shift has taken place within the Postal Service, which has caused the role of city letter carriers to evolve with social change. Mr. and Mrs. Jones on Elm Street in Anytown, USA are paying their bills online, communicating with family and friends on social media, and are shopping online. Unfortunately, this has caused first-class letter mail volume to drop 50% over what it was just a few years ago. However, we have become the shipper of choice for the almost $6 trillion e-commerce industry. Expectations are for industry growth for years to come, which means city letter carriers will play an essential role in this new segment of the economy, thereby providing job security. You must look no further than the Sunday work schedule to see the impact the e-commerce industry has had on city letter carriers. Nobody saw this coming back in the 1990s when doom and gloom predictions permeated throughout the USPS and the NALC. This mindset caused contract concessions and interest arbitration losses during some very difficult economic times over the past few years. In 1990, you hired in as a city letter carrier. Oh yeah. Today, you must endure being a CCA for 2 years on fast food wages and few benefits before career status. In 1984, it took 8 years to reach top salary, and today it takes almost 13 and a half years. In 1990, non-career casual employees were restricted to 5% of the workforce and only 2 90-day terms. Today, non-career CCAs make up 15% per district, plus another 8,000 nationwide. And that's another number that I think has climbed since this was last updated. The employer has gone from paying 76% of the cost of healthcare to 72%, passing that cost onto the backs of letter carriers. Regardless of how these and other losses took place, it's time to take them back. City letter carriers deserve to be industry leaders in pay, benefits, and working conditions. We will start by correcting the injustices inflicted on this generation of city letter carriers by the two-tier pay structure. We will work tirelessly to close the wage disparity and reduce the time it takes to reach top salary. One union, one pay structure. You know, I'm starting to wonder how old this platform is, because this is the kind of talk we had before the new contract was negotiated. And we now essentially are on one pay table. Unfortunately, it's table two. So really what we have to do now, and it's a testament to how poorly things have gone, because now we have to try to claw back the loss, where at least before we had some people on table one. Now we really don't have anybody, you know, except for a few stragglers who maybe had leaves of absences who are still working their way up table one. But for the most part, everybody's on table two, which that constitutes a complete failure of this two-table pay system. All right, moving on. Contract negotiations cannot be about giving something up in one area to gain in another. Simple logic dictates that there is only so much you can give back before there's nothing left. Therefore, I will refrain from modifying our contract by memos and advocate for new contract language when necessary. Furthermore, I will never agree to any program or process that is non-grievable. Contract negotiations must be about the value of our labor. As an example, the Teamsters recognized UPS's role in this new economy and achieved a significant victory by placing a value on the value of their labor. So this is that fight that like John Murphy talks about, where the whole idea of a union is that we're pushing for better working conditions generally and a better work-life balance. And so this step back that we took in this last contract where, yeah, we're still not going to pay you a living wage, but if you want to, you can work yourself to death, you know, like with the ability to volunteer to go beyond 60 hours, like, and 12 hours in a day, that should not be the solution to low wages. Ugh. Dude. All right, moving on. TREAP. TREAP is perhaps the most controversial. You know what? This has been withdrawn, so I'm going to skip that. Next, escalating remedies for contract violations. Escalating remedies isn't a bad thing. Repeated and continual contract violations is a bad thing. The current administration has a genuine lack of empathy for the level of frustration within the rank and file caused by management's continual violation of work rules, including distribution of overtime, number of hours worked, and inappropriate and sometimes cruel behavior of management. The calculus is simple. Stop violating the contract or face ever-increasing remedies until upper management can find someone to run a station without violating the contract. If we are to improve working conditions, we need the tools in the contract that facilitate holding management accountable. Guys, to me, this seems so obvious, but this is part of the problem with the leadership structure that we have now, is if I see management in my station making the same violation again and again, I'm going to cite that, hey, they've already been told, now they're doing it egregiously, they're doing it capriciously, that, you know, they're not paying any mind to the contract at all. Management already knows this is a violation, they're doing it anyway. And so pointing out the violation is not enough to get it to stop. If it were, they would have already stopped. You know, and the contract isn't some shackle that we put on management. It was agreed to between management and carriers. And so they've already agreed that this is the way things should run. And then for them not to do it, and to not do it egregiously and repeatedly, obviously escalated remedies are the way that we finally get them to stop. And so the difficulty we have now is that union leadership isn't having our back, isn't on board with pushing for these escalated remedies. And this is why, you know, the kind of leadership that James Henry wants to bring in and the concerned letter carriers want to bring in, this more aggressive contract enforcement is necessary. Next, city letter carrier uniform allowance. Dude, we all know how screwed up it is. I'm going to skip this one. Next, staffing and excessive work hours. After years of mutual understanding that the 12 and 60 work hour limit was supposed to be a hard stop maximum work hour limit, management has flipped the script. Today, letter carriers are being forced to work beyond the... Dude, so this is definitely written before the new contract came in, because carriers now shouldn't be forced to work beyond the 12-hour limit. They can now volunteer to work beyond the 12-hour limit. Let's see, but let's move on to see some of the other issues in here. It's not even a shared sacrifice Oh, it's about improper staffing. Improper staffing isn't a shared sacrifice because management will take letter carriers off the floor as 204Bs and make them closing supervisors so management can maintain their 8-hour day. Dude, that is so frustrating. In other cases, management will detail carriers from one office to another, which causes forced overtime issues in the losing station. It's obvious that management is being willfully negligent, forced overtime being a strategy, rather than taking up the fight over proper staffing. The previous and now current administration signed a memo of understanding which facilitates management's understaffing strategy. And now with the new contract, that further facilitates the understaffing strategy because now people can just work infinity hours. You know, and this whole idea of sending carriers from one station to another, or even worse, the forced overtime, that's the real problem. You know, if overtime people want the overtime, you know, so be it, they can have it. But mandating and mandatory overtime, this is a major issue within our union that obviously we need to more aggressively fight against. Rather than taking up the fight in support of escalating remedies for overtime violations, the current administration sees them as punitive and a bigger problem than the violation itself. It's damning. This is one of the most damning things about the Renfro administration, in my opinion. Now the Renfro administration has floated the idea of removing overtime caps. Oh, well, that's no longer floated. They did it. The current administration approach is typical of weak, hat-in-hand, give-back negotiations. As your president, I will ensure that the enabling memo, M-1968, is withdrawn post-haste. I will direct the Executive Council to submit 3 resolutions to be brought before the convention delegates seeking contract language requiring carrier delivery units to be properly staffed, giving letter carriers the right to refuse work beyond 12 hours, well, we already got that, and cease and desist language with escalating remedies be included in the national agreement. You know that, well, let me finish this paragraph. Our collective experience with the Postal Service has taught us that if the union is not a lion, then carriers are prey. So the cease and desist and the escalating remedies, you know, that's from a very small, the escalating remedy in particular is from a very small part of the, not even in the contract, it's in the JCAM, the supporting language around the contract. I believe it's in the part about opting, that if an opt is continually broken, then an escalating remedy may be appropriate. And the union has successfully argued that that escalating remedy should apply in other situations as well. But it's always been a little tenuous, you know, and there have been arbitrators, Corey's talked about this on Formate Arbitration, that have said, no, that's only in that part of the contract, and so it only applies to opt hold down violations. You can't just get escalating remedies across the board. So this is obviously something that needs to be solidified. And, you know, to me, the argument is, if to management, if you don't like escalating remedies, follow the fucking contract. You've already agreed to this contract. Just abide by it. All right, he goes on. The 4 items mentioned are not inclusive, but they are not, I would say not exhaustive, but regardless, it's not everything. But they do give you some insight into a solution-based approach for some very difficult and complex problems faced by letter carriers. The NALC has a unique process which enables the rank-and-file members to submit contract resolutions to the convention for consideration. More on that in an upcoming episode. At times in the past, the Executive Council has taken a rather heavy hand in their approach to many of these resolutions. Dude, ain't that the truth? And it was so amazing at the last convention to see that essentially whatever the Executive Council recommended, that's what the body did. To the extent possible, we should strive to moderate that response and work diligently to incorporate these items into our bargaining position. In addition to publishing the NALC bargaining position during negotiations, that was so frustrating. I got to digress here. For Renfro, like when he came to our rap session in Vegas, to say like, oh, I've been very clear about what we're asking for. No, dude, that stuff is like, you know, the bargaining positions that are laid out at previous conventions, you can't find that anywhere. That's not published. That's not readily accessible. None of that stuff is readily accessible. Okay. In addition to publishing NALC bargaining positions during negotiations, I will ensure frequent bulletins and provide updated podcasts outlining the union activities on your behalf. I will call on the membership for a demonstration of solidarity and support for our bargaining objectives. In short, whether or not the open bargaining resolution passes, we can follow its intent and spirit to the extent circumstances will allow. So again, this is clearly written before the convention, at least this part of it, and the open bargaining passed in a limited way. And, you know, this brings up a larger issue because, like, even though open bargaining passed to some extent, where there was supposed to be after the fact, like side-by-side updates, what did we ask for, what did the post office offer, you know, a timeline of events, that stuff was passed by the body, and Renfro just didn't do it. And then when charges were brought against Renfro for ignoring the resolutions, his defense was, I can ignore the resolutions, I don't have to do what the body says. And that's, you know, that's always a problem. Even for these things that James Henry is proposing, you know, we may think, I do think, that James Henry is a high integrity person who is reliable and dependable and will, to the best of his ability, do what he says. But that should not dissuade us from putting these things into the Constitution itself. Because right now, it is far too easy for the president to simply ignore what's in the Constitution or to ignore the will of the membership. And that has to be fixed. All right, moving on. James Henry's final thoughts. The Marine Corps defines leadership as the sum of those qualities of intellect, human understanding, and moral character that allows a person to inspire a group of Marines. Those who know me will tell you that the leadership principles acquired in the Marine Corps have been the guiding principles I've applied throughout my 36 years as a union advocate and leader. I've trained and practiced being technically, tactically proficient, and seek self-improvement on an ongoing basis. I'm committed to looking out for the welfare of letter carriers and keeping them informed. Foremost, I'm committed to setting an example, as letter carriers instinctively look to their president as a barometer of the union's standing. There's a lot more work to do to repair the damage done to the NALC's reputation and mend the damaged relationships caused by the fallout from the current administration's leadership failure. As a letter carrier, I know what it's like to sit out on unjust charges. As a steward, I recognize the challenges and frustration of a broken dispute resolution process. As a full-time officer from a large, diverse branch, I understand the daily battles for defending city letter carriers. I know these things because I still have a well-worn set of blues in the closet at home. I will not forget where I came from. In solidarity, James Henry. All right, so that is the current Concerned Letter Carriers platform. And most of it, I agree with. You know, some of it, I think we're really going to need constitutional amendments to back it up, so that we don't just have to rely on James Henry's word. And then further beyond that, that we don't have to rely and hope that the people who follow him are of similar integrity. We need these rules put in place in the Constitution. So, and then of course the other thing is education needs to go beyond just stewards. We need education from the top to the bottom. And that's something that I'm going to continue to push for. It's something that I'm going to continue actively doing. You know, it's one thing anybody can complain, but you have to also offer solutions. And you hear in the platform, you hear a lot of solutions. Well, it's the same thing here. You know, I see a problem, I complain about the problem, but I'm also actively trying to address that problem. So I'm going to keep doing that. I ask for you guys to keep listening. And thank you all for listening to this. I will catch you guys next time. Thank you.